a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
Sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Ryan Smith sends it ahead. Here comes LeCavalier. No one with him so far except Czech Republic players. They're able to outman but not clear. Smith, a shot, save, rebound. Oh, LeCavalier scores!
From the last World Cup of Hockey, Vinny LeCavalier scoring for Canada, World Cup pre-tournament games underway. We welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of Winnipeg Jets hockey talk and 3 hours of a World Cup of Hockey preview show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my colleagues Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk of IllegalCurve.com, now of Illegal Curve Radio. Every Saturday, Dave's going to join us here on TSN 1290. Without further ado, Dave, welcome formally to the Saturday morning program here. You have big shoes to fill, literally, in your large cousin, Richard Pollock, the aforementioned Richard Pollock, who, of course, has left us to join the Florida Panthers organization. We welcome you to the program, David.
I will be the Darren Dreger to his Dave Nonis. It will be big shoes to fill, as you say, Drew, but I hope to do an admirable job.
There
what
you go.
What size feet does Richie have? 13?
Yeah, but I've got 11, so I'm close.
Yeah, I'm 11 too.
So we're okay.
Well, then I have the smallest feet in the room, but so be it, as it were. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Ezzy, good morning to you, fine sir. How are you? Are you looking well?
Yeah, good morning. I'm just glad that Dave has finally joined the show. I was hoping maybe he'd join the show, you know, in early August or something, Drew.
Dave likes his summer. I can accept that. I mean, I understand, not wanting to spend your summers in this windowless bunker with yourself and myself, Ezzy. So I can't fault Dave for that. But, you know, this is his last summer off. It's not like next summer he gets to take the summer off. He's got to be full-time starting next year as well.
Oh, yeah. Now that he's joined the show, we're going to be working.
One
he's
for
be
all,
doing
all
some
for one.
Time work and everything like that. But, no, in all honesty, we're super happy to have Dave on the show now. He's always done an excellent job with the website. And he's been on the show sporadically over the years, and I'm just happy that he's going to be taking away your mic time, Drew.
Yes, anything that requires me to speak less on this program is good for the audience. It's good for us in the room. So, yes, no argument there whatsoever. We will, of course, as I mentioned, do a comprehensive World Cup of Hockey preview. The tournament officially with regular games gets underway next Saturday. The pre-tournament games have started. They started overseas in Finland and in Russia between the Czechs and the Russians and the Finns and the Swedes. Earlier in the week. Yesterday, of course, we saw our first taste of Team Canada as they played Team USA in Columbus. They'll get back at it tonight later on as they will do battle in Ottawa. But before we get started on the World Cup of Hockey, Paul Maurice, Winnipeg Jets head coach, who of course is helping out in the World Cup of Hockey for Team Europe, Paul Maurice was on Hustler and Lawless yesterday. And as Jets fans know, Jacob Trouba, restricted free agent, still not signed. It's now September 10th, and people are getting even more nervous as the start of the season is coming closer and closer. Exhibition games for the Winnipeg Jets only 16 days away. Jacob Trouba, still unsigned, as I mentioned. Paul Maurice was on HNL yesterday, had some interesting comments regarding Jacob Trouba, regarding his role with the Jets going forward. Here's Paul Maurice from yesterday's HNL with Hustler and Lawless.
You do have two veterans that play the right side in Byfuglien and Myers, and you've tried a little bit with Trouba on the left side. Do you think he's ready to do that? And is that the way you would plan to deploy him this year? And if not, how come?
So the answer would just be yes, right? So you got to get, once you get to that certain age where you're demanding by your play more minutes, then we have to find you those more minutes. So the biggest hole that I think he fits best over on the left, we can move one of the other two right-handed gentlemen over, but as you get older and you get into your career, it's harder to make that change. Jake's a pretty versatile guy. I mean, even there were some some growing pains with it last year early, but I thought he improved on it. I think he'll continue to get better at it. So, yeah, he's got to. And, again, I'm careful about what I say because you got to earn it, right, by your play. If you're not playing worthy of big minutes, then you're not going to get them. I fully believe he will, and he's deserved them. He played 22 minutes last year, which is, for me, right about right for that age. He's going to play in the 24, 25 this year. He's stronger. He looks stronger. So that's the normal progression. Everybody wants everything to happen faster. I get that. I really like where Jake's at. I really like him as a player, and I like having him on my team. We'll have to find him more minutes to get him on the ice more to continue that development, but we've got a way to do that.
That's Winnipeg Jets head coach Paul Maurice on yesterday's Hustler and Lawless program here on TSN 1290. The big takeaway from that, and I think this is, we had heard in the course of the summer and in the course of the negotiation between Trouba's representatives and the Winnipeg Jets representatives, that he wants some assurances that there's going to be additional ice time for him. He wasn't in a position where he wanted to sign a long-term deal or any sort of deal with the Jets as the number three right side defenseman. So we hear there from Paul Maurice that his strategy, assuming the Jets get Trouba under contract, is that Trouba will play more minutes on the left side, either with Bufflin or with Myers, as Jets fans looked at the depth chart and they saw a hole there. So these comments from Paul Maurice, you take these as a good sign for Jacob Trouba, a good sign for the negotiations that maybe this is going to get them, this assurance from the Jets head coach is going to maybe get them a little bit closer to getting a contract done between the restricted free agent and the team?
I don't, Drew, and I do think that the comments were very interesting, and Paul Maurice even says in that clip that he doesn't want to commit to too much, but to me, Dave, what's the most interesting about what Paul Maurice says there is he is committing and saying that he wants Jacob Trouba to play on the left side. We've talked about this a lot this summer, Drew, and I think that at the end of the day, the numbers have to work, right? So whether that's going to be a bridge deal or that's going to be a 6 or 7 year contract, it has to be at a number that both sides are comfortable at, and that is the essence of negotiations. I think the Jets would probably be more comfortable with $5 million a year on an average annual value, but I think it's going to be a little bit higher than that, probably closer to $6 million a year. I think if we're talking about $7 million a year, we're getting a little carried away there. But needless to say, Paul Maurice is saying that he's admitting Jacob Trouba, it took him some time to adjust to playing on the left side. He's a natural right shot defenseman, right? But because, as we've talked about throughout the summer, Dustin Bufflin, Tyler Myers, those guys are on the right side, and they're basically ingrained as right shot defensemen. Someone has to play the left side. Jacob Trouba's not going to play on the third pair, Drew, to your point. And we know that. Jacob Trouba's too good. He's too valuable to this team to play on the third pair. So I wouldn't read too much into these comments as far as meaning that a contract is coming up. Jacob Trouba's playing for Team North America at the World Cup. He's not signing during the World Cup. We know that. No. The earliest he's going to sign is early October before the season starts. I still think there's a good chance that that happens. I don't think that either side wants a holdout, especially the Jets. But
let me just stop you right there, no disrespect. You hear people say the word holdout. This isn't a hold. This wouldn't be a holdout in my opinion because he doesn't have a valid contract.
Well, it's a holdout in the sense that he isn't starting the season.
Well,
the team.
But that's holdout to me puts blame on the player, where there is no blame necessarily to go on the player if they haven't come to terms. It's one thing if you have a valid contract and you choose not to honor that contract. Alexei Yashin, right, back in the day when he refused, sure, to play, that's a holdout.
Sure.
And I understand.
It's a little bit semantics. The point,
it is a little semantics.
The point I'm trying to make is I don't think either side wants Jacob Trouba not to be playing that first regular season game for the Jets. They don't want us. They want his name on a contract before October 13th when the season starts. And, it's just interesting, Dave, that Paul Maurice was that open and forthcoming. And he always is when he talks to the media. But he's basically saying, no, we want Jacob Trouba to play the left side. That's not necessarily a bad thing. I think Jacob Trouba and Kurt Overhart, what they've been trying to say is they want him to be a top pair defenseman. They want him to play top power play or at the very least second power play. They want an increased role on this team. And I don't necessarily think that he's not going to get that. It just so happens that guys like Dustin Bufflin and Tyler Myers get those offensive responsibilities maybe sometimes ahead of him.
Well, you hear from Coach Maurice's comments that he doesn't want to switch over Bufflin or Myers to the other side. So clearly Trouba is the guy, and as we saw last year, is the guy he's going to be putting into that role. So there are a couple of, I mean, one of the interesting things was the fact that he committed to playing him on the left side. That was one of the things I thought that was interesting from the comments. The other thing I thought was the fact that he basically said he's going to elevate his minutes. And that's the kind of the carrot to Trouba. He's basically saying he played 22 minutes last year, which is where I wanted him. I mean, Coach Maurice is basically saying, I have a blueprint. You know, and this is my blueprint for the team, and this is both as a team blueprint and as individual players. And he's essentially saying to Trouba, it's part of the progression of you growing as a player. Now you're going to get that role, provided you earn it. I'm not just giving it to you, but you're going to earn that role as a guy who's going to get 24 or 25 minutes. That's his vision for Trouba for this season. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, if, you know, this happens. But the key point also to factor in is, whether Trouba wants to play on the left side. I mean, we're just assuming that he's, you know, I mean, not every player, I mean, look, and later on they talk about it within that Maurice interview, not every player wants to play on their opposite side.
Which, and I think the reason why Trouba would be the one moving to his left side as opposed to Bufflin or Myers is, you know, veteran prerogative, more or less, at that point in time. You know, Bufflin and Myers have played so many years in the league, they've played on the right side exclusively for those many years in the league, that it would be, you know, old dog, new trick, that sort of idea. Whereas Trouba as the puppy, if I'm torturing this analogy a little bit further, Trouba as the puppy might be a little bit easier to adapt to the left side, as opposed to Bufflin and Myers, who've been doing it on the right side for so long. But we did see Zach Bogosian. If you remember when Trouba broke into the league, they tried to move Zach Bogosian to the left side to play with Trouba on the right side, and it just didn't work. Bogosian couldn't handle that move. Now, I think Zach Bogosian's biggest downfall as an NHL player is his lack of, you know, maybe seeing the game and his hockey IQ. Jacob Trouba has a higher hockey IQ than Zach Bogosian does. So I'm curious to see if Trouba will be able to adapt to that better than other players in the league, better than Zach Bogosian did earlier in his stint here in Winnipeg. But, you know, Trouba, I think, has got to be happy to hear, look, the coach wants me to be one of the horses. He doesn't want me to be in the stable for the majority of the game or a lot of the game as I was last year playing with a partner who just couldn't keep up with me anymore.
But Mark Stewart and Jacob Trouba only played together for either half of the season or less than half of the season. So
the numbers were more than half the year. It was more than half the year that they played together. Trouba played the majority of his minutes last year with Mark Stewart.
And so what were those minutes?
I can look it up real quick. I don't have it right.
So at most, it was 50 games.
It was more than half the year. Yes, it wasn't the entire year, but it was more than half the year. But you saw, if you look at the numbers, and not the, you know, goals, assists necessarily, but some of the deeper numbers there, mm-hmm. Trouba's performance improved.
Right, we've gone over this before. Mm-hmm. He's not playing with Mark Stewart this year.
Right,
that happened last year.
That's true. Right.
So that can't be used as an excuse anymore.
No, he's going to get the opportunity he wants.
This blaming Jacob Trouba's performance on Mark Stewart and all of the Jets' D problems being blamed on Mark Stewart, it's enough of that. I mean, the Jets' defense did not play well as a group last year. That's everybody. So Mark Stewart had a bad year, yes. I think he's taken way too much of the blame for either Jacob Trouba's performance or anybody's performance as a whole. So, yes, Jacob Trouba didn't play well when he played with Mark Stewart because Mark Stewart didn't play well. That's fine. The point is what we've been saying the entire time is that Jacob Trouba is going to get those minutes. Nobody's denying that. He wants a long-term contract at a certain amount of money, and it's a negotiation. And all Paul Maurice is doing is saying that what we already know. I mean, we know Jacob Trouba is going to play 24, 25 minutes a game. He's going to play second power play. He's not going to play first power play because you know who's going to play first power play? Buff.
Yeah.
Patrick Laine is probably going to play first power play. He's been playing on the point for Finland on their first power play unit.
Jacob
Trouba's not getting first power play unit, probably. He has to live with that.
I don't think he has a quibble with that. I don't think he would say that his offensive game is better than Dustin Bufflin's. I think what he wanted is an assurance that he's going to be a 24, 25-minute-a-game player.
And Paul Maurice has said he's going to get that.
And I think that's...
So what's the problem?
That's music to the ears of Jacob Trouba and his representation that, you know, this is what the team has planned for me this coming season is to be a, you know, a top four minute eater on the back end alongside Bufflin or Myers, and you know, really play those four guys, Bufflin, Myers, Trouba, and Enstrom. Those guys are going to take up probably 48 to 50 minutes of a 60-minute hockey game in terms of the back end.
We also have to remember, we don't know that he's going to sign a long-term deal. So if he does get a short-term deal, he still needs to, you know, use it and use that time that he's going to be trying to prove himself for the next one.
Well, that's, I think I was you know, along those lines, Dave, I was going to say that, you know, this opportunity, if he does play these 24, 25 minutes, maybe he signs a one-year contract or a two-year bridge deal and goes out and, you know, really dominates or plays very well for the next 2 years and then can really cash in at a even more than a $5 million a year number or whatever figure you want to throw out.
I think at this point, because he hasn't signed, that is becoming more of an option as opposed to in June or July when we thought that Jacob Trouba was destined to sign a 6 or 7 year deal. Now at this point, a bridge deal, even though I don't think that maybe is what either side wants, it might have to be the case.
Lots to talk about. We'll see how this negotiation unfolds. And, of course, Jacob Trouba will be in action for Team North America at the World Cup of Hockey. We'll talk to Craig Custance about Team North America a little bit later on in the program. But when we come back, we start our preview. We look at Team Canada, the defending World Cup of Hockey champions. They were in action last night. We'll talk about the game last night. We'll look at the lines. We'll look at the roster. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
I think there's a lot of excitement there, being from the same area, and obviously he's a phenomenal player. It makes it a little more special, and playing with Bergie, same thing. You know, we have a lot of chemistry, played together for a while, so it's great to play with a couple guys that I know, and I think it's just a bit of a bigger stage. Obviously the World's Championships is a great tournament, a lot of great players, but it's just a step above that, and you have the top guys in the league, best players on every team, and when you walk in the room, you see the guys that you're sitting beside. It's a pretty cool thing, and I'm very excited to be here.
That's Team Canada forward Brad Marchand speaking ahead of the start of the World Cup of Hockey training camp. Canada in action last night, falling to Team USA by a 4-2 margin. The two teams will do battle again tonight in a second half of a back-to-back game. That this time in Ottawa as part of the pre-tournament schedule of the World Cup of Hockey. I got to say, boys, quickly about last night's game, I couldn't believe the intensity in that game. You know, I thought it was going to be sort of a sleepy skate between these two teams, not getting a lot of emotion involved, just sort of trying to get their legs under them after a long summer for a lot of these guys. They came out of the blocks flying. I couldn't believe that there was this much dislike. There seemed to be palpable intensity on both sides. As somebody who hasn't been a big fan, hasn't been that excited about the World Cup of Hockey, last night's game between Canada and the U.S., just a simple pre-tournament game, gave me a jolt of energy.
Yeah, Drew, I couldn't agree with you more. If you watch that game and you're a hockey fan, whether you were a hardcore hockey fan or not, or you were going into this tournament, like you said, Drew, really a fan of the format or not, it was a fantastic game. And it was obviously highlighted, if you want to call it that, or maybe the intensity was the highest when Ryan Kessler drove Shea Weber into the boards and then he was kicked out mm-hmm. with a major. And you had Jonathan Toews going after Ryan Kessler, and Shea Weber looked like he was going to murder Ryan Kessler. But the point was, these guys were trying. And it's funny because I thought Ryan Kessler was one of their best forwards. You remember he went down and blocked a shot, saved a goal. I think that was the second period, earlier in that same period, because if I remember correctly, the hit on Weber was in the second period.
I believe that's correct, yes.
But you're absolutely right, Drew. And the best thing is they're playing again tonight in Ottawa. So I think Columbus was really treated, the city of Columbus was treated to an excellent exhibition hockey game. And the point is, even if these guys haven't played meaningful hockey in a long time, and when you're talking about the Sharks and the Penguins, Brent Burns and Joe Thornton and Sidney Crosby, they were playing hockey well into June. But needless to say, these guys were still busting their butts and trying to win this hockey game. We saw late in the third period, the Canadians almost tied it up. I mean, in the second and third period, let's be honest, Canada dominated the U.S. Whoa. Jonathan Quick was the difference in this game. I'm not taking anything away from the U.S., and at the end of the day, guys, this is an exhibition game. It means nothing. But it does set the tone for the actual regulation tournament games, right? But, I mean, Canada, it's not like the U.S. really beat Canada bad or anything like that. They beat them 4-2. They had an empty net goal. Sure. And sure, the U.S. did have some really good chances. They could have had 4 or 5 goals. Carey Price didn't look good, by the way, Drew. I mean, Carey Price has not played a game since November.
It's not surprising. There's a ton of rust on Carey Price.
Yes.
So, I mean, you know, I think that it's safe to say entering this tournament, all three of us in the room thought it's Canada's tournament to lose. And that, you know, Canada's a significant favorite to win this tournament. Anybody going to disagree with that? No? Okay, you guys are both saying I'm
Well, they've correct. Won the last two Olympic golds. They won the last World Cup of hockey. They've Why been, wouldn't you be picking Canada?
You're exactly right. Did you see anything last night that gives you pause?
Yes. And I'll tell you what gives me the most pause.
Please.
They've lost a little bit of speed without Jamie Benn and Jeff Carter. Duncan Keith, I think, aside from Drew Doughty, is the best defenseman in the league.
Keith so obviously not playing for Team Canada.
Right, and that's not to take anything away from a guy like Jay Bouwmeester, who didn't play last night, by the way. But you're talking about a guy like Keith. I mean, he just does more things than most other players on the ice. So I think they lost a little bit of speed. And again, I mean, you're replacing Jamie Benn and Jeff Carter with Corey Perry and Logan Couture. Those are pretty good hockey players. Mm-hmm. But I'm just saying they lose a little bit of speed losing those guys. But also, they have 10 centers of their 13 forwards. So you have almost the entire team playing wing that isn't supposed to, right? Like Brad Marchand is one of the rare guys that's a natural winger. Almost all the other guys that are playing are natural centers. Corey Perry, who wasn't playing last night, of course. And I think it would have been a different game if he was in the lineup.
Well, I'd expect, we were talking about this before the show started, that we'd expect Corey Perry to get into the Team Canada lineup for tonight's exhibition game against the U.S. in Ottawa. I would expect Bouwmeester to get into the lineup, too, to be honest, just to get him some legs under him. These are exhibition games. You might as well see what you got. But to your point, Corey Perry, another one of those guys who is an actual natural winger who wouldn't be playing slightly out of position by moving from the center spot to the wing on this Team Canada.
Right, and I don't think it's going to be a big concern, Dave, but just looking at the tournament, the biggest concern is probably Carey Price's health. But the problem, I guess, if Carey Price isn't ready to go, they go to Braden Holtby, I would say, next, just him coming off of a Vezina Trophy winning season.
Yeah, probably the second best, you know, certainly a top five NHL goaltender.
Right, so that's not a huge problem, but the concern is, then if Braden Holtby's not ready to go because he should be ready to go. But those are probably my biggest concerns. In goal with Carey Price, but Braden Holtby will probably step in if Price can't go. And then just losing a little bit of speed. But at the end of the day, you know, Canada just has so much talent. They should be good in this tournament.
I think prior to the game, someone asked Sidney Crosby how he was expecting Carey Price to do, and was he concerned because he hadn't played a game since November 25th of last year? And Sidney Crosby just laughed, and he said, no, there's no concern. So, like, you know what? I mean, the reality is that Carey Price didn't have a great game last night, but it was his first game in how many months? And I really think that I agree with Ezzy. Like, there are obviously a few concerns. There's always concerns. No team is completely impenetrable, but this Team Canada, you look at them up and down, and you're just like how good was that Marchand line last night? Well, they had as many shots as the entire American team. I mean, they had 18 shots yesterday as a line. So, I mean, they played unbelievably. Ezzy and I were talking about this before. It really was the type of game that Corey Perry would have excelled in because it was a dirty game. And the intensity, as you guys have both said, was unbelievable for the first exhibition game of a tournament. Nobody's ever really, you know, I mean, it happens so infrequently and already. But once you put on that, you know, jersey of your country, it just changes things. So guys who are teammates maybe in the NHL suddenly, or buddies, you know, because they grew up in the same area or whatever. But, you know, you look at them and you're thinking to yourself, it's amazing how once you put on that jersey, these guys just instantly hate each other. And like I said, there were almost 18,000 yesterday in Columbus hearing that cannon go off every time the Americans scored. And just the Team USA, I mean, the USA chants from the crowd. And obviously, there were a lot of Canadians there. But still, the USA chant, like, it was a fun environment and it was a great atmosphere. And I just thought it was funny because someone was a little bit hyperbole, was like, this has got the intensity of a Stanley Cup playoff game. I went, let's not get there yet. But it was good. I mean, for an exhibition game, it was pretty good. And the players justified for the fan base, you know, who went out to this game in September thinking, like you guys said, that it might be a lot of floating. And instead, you actually saw high-intensity hockey.
Drew, at the end of the day,
Yeah.
Canada's third line was John Tavares, Ryan Getzlaff, and Steven Stamkos. Their third line.
Those
are three of the best forwards in the game.
Yeah.
That's their third line.
And that's why and that's why Canada is always an overwhelming favorite when you enter into these tournaments. I think another thing worth pointing out, the format of the tournament, there's the two groups.
Yep.
Group A, which is...
Group A is easier.
Group A is way easier. I mean, it's U.S., the Czech Republic, Canada, and Team Europe.
It's going to be tough to come out of Group B.
Group B is going to be an absolute battle where you have Team North America, which came out with that dominant victory over Team Europe a couple nights ago, where they looked fast and they looked skilled. So Team North America, Team Russia, Team Finland, and Team Sweden. Two of those teams are going home without making it into the semifinals. Canada and the U.S., all due respect to the Czech Republic and to Team Europe, Canada and the U.S. have a cakewalk in the round-robin portion of this tournament.
Well, it's funny, Drew, when you talk about Group B, Sweden, Finland, Russia, and Team North America, you'd probably say Sweden and Finland are maybe the favorites to win that group. But to your point, North America has a lot of speed, a lot of skill. Russia's got a great group of forwards, probably not the best group of defensemen.
Yeah.
But needless to say, two really good teams are not going to make the semifinals because that semifinal is a single elimination game, right? And then the final is best of three.
That's correct.
So it's going, like, what if Finland doesn't even make it to the semifinals or Russia?
It's a
good possibility.
It's going to be a real battle to come out of that Group B. I mean, you look at Canada, the U.S., when they face in the final round robin game, I believe, in that pool, it's just a game to determine who's going to be first in that pool. There's no way Team Czech Republic, all due respect, they don't have the talent to match up against Canada, the U.S., and Team Europe doesn't either. I mean, Team Europe's got some nice players, but just not enough talent to go up against the Canadians or the Americans. So they certainly get a much easier path to the semifinals. But that Group B is going to, the hockey out of Group B, Finland and Sweden, I mean, it doesn't take much to get those two teams to hate each other. And Team North America is going to have all the eyes on them because they have all the young talent and they're not just happy to be there. They're like, well, you know, we have more talent than almost anybody. You know, McDavid, Matthews, you know, keep going, you know, Scheifele, you know, Trouba on the back end, Hellebuck in net, Matt Murray in net. Team North America is sort of the dark horse that I think a lot of people could see coming out of that Group B at the expense of one of the Finns or the Swedes.
I think there's a lot of people, too, guys, that kind of wants Team North America to not maybe win the tournament, but at least get to the semifinals and get to the finals to prove that one of those two teams that was added to this format of the tournament, North America and Europe, can really make it. And I think there's the traditionalists, I should say, that really want it to be the countries in the semifinals. But I agree with you, Drew. If you watched that first exhibition game between North America and Europe, and North America skated circles around Europe for large parts of that game, they won that game 4-0. No team in this tournament is going to be as fast as that team.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to head out to Helsinki, Finland, talk about Team Finland with our good friend Juha Hitela of Usanomat newspaper in Finland. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Curve Crew are back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Shortly after 9:30 in the morning, welcome back to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuke. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Juha Hitela. Juha covers the world of hockey for Usanomat newspaper in Finland. Juha, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning to you guys.
How are you, Juha?
I'm excellent. How are you guys?
Doing very well. Thank you very much. I obviously brought you on to talk about Team Finland as part of our World Cup of Hockey preview. And last year on the international scene, Finland had one of their best years ever. I think it's safe to say that they sort of took maybe a step forward in the eyes of the world of hockey as one of the preeminent, you know, hockey nations of the world. Is there pressure on this Finnish team as the World Cup of Hockey gets underway to sort of match what they had done last year on the international stage?
Luckily, the Finnish fans and Finnish people are so knowledgeable of hockey that they know that even though the Finland won World Juniors under 18 and got a silver medal in men's World Championships. This is a totally different ball game. This has nothing to do with those tournaments, and in this tournament, Finland is an underdog. That's for sure.
You have Finland beat Sweden in their first exhibition game in overtime, but after the game, Winnipeg Jets draft pick Patrick Laine was really not happy with his performance. I imagine that you heard some of his comments. He's playing on the top line for Team Finland with Alexander Barkov and Olli Jokinen. What did you think of Patrick Laine's performance in that first exhibition game? What did you think of his comments, and what are the expectations for Patrick Laine? I imagine they're just as high as they are for his first season as a Jet.
Well, the expectations are obviously high. He played with Jokinen and Barkov in a World Championship, so he knows his line mate. But to be honest, he was sloppy. He didn't get in the situations. He didn't get in the goal scoring chances. And this was the first time when he really played against top players in the world. Swedish defensemen their defense is probably the best in the tournament alongside with Canada. Now he faced them first time and he saw that this is not the same game he used to play. Having said that, this was the first game of the season, not obviously for everybody, but including him. So I wouldn't make big judgments based on how game went on Thursday.
Juha, what kind of reception is this tournament getting in Finland?
It's getting it's pretty slow. I thought the excitement would be a little bit bigger than it's been so far, but like the Finnish League is starting next week. KHL is already going. We have a beautiful early September. People are still at the patios, still at their cottages. And they're not quite ready for the hockey season, but I predict that when the tournament really starts next week, everybody's going to be excited.
Juha Hitela is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Juha covers the world of hockey for Usanomat newspaper in Finland. Juha, there's another pre-tournament game taking place today between Finland and Sweden that'll get underway in about 90 minutes time or so. Tuukka Rask will get the start for Finland after Pekka Rinne got the start in the first game. When the tournament gets underway for real next Sunday for Finland against Team North America, who do you think is going to be the starting goaltender for Team Finland?
If I would make the pick right now, I'd say Tuukka Rask. But I assume that today's game will determine which one is going to be the starter. Rinne played well. I mean, he didn't fail on Thursday. But if Rask plays as well as Rinne played Thursday, I think he's going to be the starter.
Juha, as you know, winning championships usually comes down to defense. That's why they say defense wins championships. And we were talking about Team Canada last segment before we had you on, and it's generally kind of accepted that Canada and Sweden have the best defenses in this tournament, but I was watching that Finland-Sweden pre-tournament game, and you look at that defense: Olli Mäta, Rasmus Ristolainen, who's still unsigned, of course, Jyrki Jokipäkä, Sami Vatanen, Esa Lindell, who's a highly regarded prospect in the Dallas Stars system. That defense is pretty darn good as far as I'm concerned. Do you think it's getting enough respect in this tournament?
Well, I don't think, I mean, they're young, let's put it this way. Of those six who are now playing and who are going to be in a lineup, Jokipäkä and Sami Vatanen are the oldest one, and they are both 25. So it's young. They have talent. It's talented. They have skills, but it's very young, very inexperienced roster. And based on what I've seen and we've talked with the coaches, Ristolainen, Mäta, and Vatanen are going to play a lot. You're going to see 26, 27, 28 minutes of those guys. Jokipäkä was really good on Thursday. To me, he was very pleasant surprised how well he played. So I think he's going to get a heavier workload than everybody assumed, but still, that's the weakest point of Team Finland, even though they have good prospects.
So the question would be, what can Finland do to win this tournament?
Well, what can they do? Oh, Tuukka Rask has to be, or Pekarinen, whoever gets to be the starter, he has to be an excellent. Like, this is, you can call me in any tournament in any given year, in any given level, and ask about Finland, and the answer is always, well, the goalie has to be superb. That's the only way Finland is ever going to win any tournament in hockey. And this is, that's what it comes down to this time, too.
Juha Hitela is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Juha covers the world of hockey for Uusisanomat newspaper in Finland. Juha, Alexander Barkov, you know, is centering the top line alongside, you know, he played with Patrick Laine of the Winnipeg Jets and I believe Jussi Jokinen in that first game. You know, it might be, I think the pressure on Laine or the spotlight is on Laine because of, you know, his tremendous year last year getting drafted so high. But is Alexander Barkov really the key forward for Team Finland to have success in this tournament?
For sure. I may be biased, but I think he's the most underrated player in NHL. People still don't realize how good he is and how really, really good he is. That's partly because of his personality. But bigger part is that he plays in Florida, and a lot of people don't follow Florida Panthers that much. To me, when I look at the game on Thursday, he's probably the only skater, besides maybe Mika Koivu, who could fit into Sweden's roster. And he would be the first number one center, and even in Team Sweden. He's really, really good, and he's the one who's going to carry this team, the skater who's going to carry this team, that's for sure.
Juha, when you were answering Dave's question, you mentioned that goaltending is going to be key for Team Finland, whether it's Tuukka Rask or Pekka Rinne, and that's really going to apply for most teams. I think you'd agree with that. But do you also think it's going to come down to the secondary scoring for Finland? Because when you look at Patrick Laine, and you just talked about Alexander Barkov and Mikko Koivu, those are the primary scorers for Finland, but then you'd go down the roster and you'd say, well, maybe they're not as deep as Canada. How many teams are as deep as Canada? But they've still got lots of talent, whether it's Mikael Granlund, Teuvo Teravainen, a guy like Valtteri Filppula, who I thought was very good in that exhibition game against Sweden. Is that really going to be one of the other big keys for Finland to get contributions from those second and third lines?
That's for sure. Granlund and Koivu are going to be in a second line, and they're kind of a pair. They played together in Minnesota. Now that Granlund is switched to winger, even more permanently, and then there's going to be a third line with Filppula and Jori Lehtorante with Teravainen. Those are the guys who have the skill level. Like, if that third line, which I think in combination wasn't really good, even though Filppula was good, that combination wasn't really good on Thursday. But if they find their chemistry, that is one of those lines that can produce some goals, that's for sure.
Juha Hitela is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Juha covers the world of hockey for Uusisanomat newspaper in Finland. Juha, the head coach of Team Finland, their national team head coach, is Lauri Marjamaki. And this is obviously probably not, I may have butchered his name and I apologize for that, but he's obviously not a household name here in Canada. It probably more well-known in Finland. He's been a head coach in the Finnish Elite League for a number of years. How is his adjustment period going to be moving from the international-sized ice surface to the smaller North American ice surface that's going to be played for the World Cup of Hockey? Do you expect he's going to have any problems with transitioning his strategies to that smaller ice surface?
Well, I've never seen a Finnish national team coach who is as well prepared for small rink than he is, considering the fact that he's doing it the first time. Obviously, he's coached World Juniors in North America, so he's played with a smaller ice surface, but he did extensive scouting last year. He did a couple of tours in North America during the playoffs. Teppo Numminen is his assistant coach. He's got a lot of input on playing for systems and tactics and stuff like that from Saku Koivu and Kimmo Tiiminen, who have been like in the inner circle of this team. Obviously, they're not coaches, but they're smart hockey guys who can teach and who can give advices to him. And he's been in the best against best players tournament. He was assistant coach in Sochi. Obviously, it's a bigger rink, but I don't think his adjustment system-wise is going to be a problem.
Juha, as you know, in 2004, the last time the World Cup of Hockey was played, Finland finished second to Team Canada, who won the tournament. How much is Team Finland using that as a motivation for this tournament?
I don't think it's going to be a motivation at all. There's like a lot of guys. You can imagine guys like Sebastian Aho, who was born 1997, or Laine, who was born 98. They don't even remember the tournament. Mikko Koivu is the only player who was in the roster back then. I think the motivation more comes from like Sochi. There's a lot of players, some of the coaching staff, some of the management was there. I think that's going to be more motivation for them, like showing that the experience in Sochi can help us. It shows that and obviously to Vancouver and Torino too, like in the last three tournaments where the best players have been, Finland has always been in semifinals. I think that's more the motivation for these players.
Juha, as you mentioned, Mikko Koivu is the only player on the current Finland roster who was on that 2004 roster, and Teppo Numminen and Teemu Selanne were also on that roster, so shout out to those two former Jets.
We'll let you go on this last question, and it's sort of fortuitous that Ezzy brought up a lot of those names. It's not about the World Cup of Hockey, but we're only about just a little less than 2 months away from the Heritage Classic that's going to take place here in Winnipeg. Wanted to know if there's any excitement building in Finland over the opportunity to see Teemu Selanne and Teppo Numminen and Jari Kurri and Esa Tiikkanen all on the ice together, all stalwarts of Finnish hockey, all on the ice playing in that game that's going to take place here in Winnipeg in a couple months' time.
For sure. I actually spoke with the producer of the TV channel that has NHL rights here. I spoke with them this week, and they say that's going to be their first like a big game of the season. I think the time it's going to be like a primetime game here, like or semi-primetime, like 10 p.m., 10:30 p.m. game here. So they're really building up and like really starting their NHL season from that game. So it's going to build a lot of, I think it's going to build a hype here for sure.
Juha Hitela covers the world of hockey for Uusanomat newspaper in Finland. Juha, really appreciate your time and your insight this morning. Thanks very much for doing this.
Thank you guys.
Take care, Juha.
Happy to be there.
Yes, take care. We'll speak to you soon. Let's head to break. When we come back, we continue our preview by looking at the team from the United States of America. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Top of the point now for Suter. Tried to get it to score. Zach Parise led the Wild with 25 goals this year. He had a ton of issues with his back. He's had some rest. He says he feels great. And right here, he drives to the high slot. And that's how you beat.
Zach Parise proving his back is back in shape.
That was a nice goal.
It was a nice goal. Nice tip-in by Zach Parise to beat Carey Price last night in the opener, the pre-tournament opener between Team USA and Team Canada. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, maybe a new Heritage Classic jersey, for instance, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. Check them out, conveniently located on the corner of Portage Avenue in Sherbourne, their fancy new digs. Check out our good friends Keener at Keener Jerseys.
Yeah, Drew, I was there last weekend recording a podcast. We've been doing a podcast for a couple of months now.
Yeah.
And they had some of the World Cup of Hockey jerseys there. Canada, North America, Europe. There was a USA one. Just looking great. And I agree with you. Back to what you said in the first segment, I'm starting to get more into the World Cup of Hockey. I prefer the Olympics and just countries, but how could you not get into this tournament, guys, after that game between Canada and the U.S. yesterday?
It certainly jolted my excitement, as I said off the start. Canada, of course, falling to the United States. The U.S. with an impressive performance. They're sort of a dark horse in this tournament. I don't think anybody's really expecting much from them. I think people look at them and say, well, yeah, they don't have the talent necessarily, or they don't have the talent on the back end that Canada or Sweden do, and they don't necessarily have the offensive firepower up front like some of the other countries. But this U.S. team...
But what do they have? They have excellent goaltending.
They have excellent goaltending.
And Jonathan Quick proved that, and it might just be an exhibition game, Drew, but Jonathan Quick has that ability. Ben Bishop has that ability. Corey Schneider.
Yeah, Corey Schneider.
He's the third goalie. Corey Schneider, to me, might, in fact, be the best goalie of these three. I think it would be tough to argue that, especially with the way Quick played yesterday.
Yeah.
But this U.S. team is still very good. I don't think they're a dark horse. I think they're one of the favorites to win it.
So you would go as far as to say is that they're a favorite to win it? Would you put
just to be clear here, I'm picking Canada to win it. I'm just saying that, to me, the best three teams in this tournament are Canada, Sweden, and the U.S.
Fair enough. I don't necessarily disagree with that, but I would put the U.S. I was, when I was thinking about it, I would put the U.S. at a bit of a step lower than Canada or Sweden. But my opinion is beginning to change. The U.S. seems to be, seems to have something about them when it comes to this tournament. Ryan Kesler already being, the agitating Ryan Kesler that we've seen. We saw how good the U.S. was at 2010 in Vancouver.
Right.
A smaller ice surface, I think, suits this team very well. They have sort of a good combination of grit and size, and then they probably have the best offensive player in the world in Patrick Kane. But so maybe the combination of all those three things working together is able to give them a bit of a leg up.
Guys, on paper, Canada and Sweden are better teams. I agree with you that the U.S. is a step below these two countries, but as you mentioned, they have a lot of speed, probably not as fast, I would say, as Canada, Sweden, or North America, maybe even Russia.
Mm-hmm.
But as you mentioned, they've got the grit, but they've got an excellent goaltender, three excellent goaltenders.
Yeah.
And they've got the leading scorer, the reigning leading scorer in the NHL, and Patrick Kane. And Blake Wheeler, guys, I didn't even think had that great of a game. When you talk about Dustin Byfuglien, I thought Dustin Byfuglien was fantastic yesterday, especially in the early stages of the game, in that first period when the U.S. wasn't creating much offense. Mm-hmm. Byfuglien had a couple of shots on net, a couple of good scoring chances. So when you're talking about this defense, it doesn't stack up against Canada or Sweden, especially when you get down to the lower pairings, Jack Johnson, Matt Niskanen. But it's still loaded with great talent. And when you're talking about guys like Ryan Kesler, TJ Oshie, Justin Abdelkader, that's kind of your third line, grind line. I mean, these guys are tough to play against. I agree with you, Drew, 100%. The North American ice suits Canada the best. It suits the U.S. the best. Sweden, Finland, the teams that play that more North American style type of game. But at the end of the day, Jonathan Quick can steal games, and they have a lot of guys that can score, and they play well as a team. They always have.
Yeah.
And the reason why I don't think the U.S. is favored in this tournament is because they weren't very good at 2014 in Sochi.
Yeah.
They weren't very good at the last World Cup in 2004. It was really 1996 that they shocked everybody and beat Canada at the World Cup. But since then, they haven't won a best-on-best tournament.
Well, the U.S. has never been a very good team in the Olympics when the Olympics have been overseas.
Right.
I mean, they were very good in Salt Lake City, of course. Canada beat them in the gold medal game. They were very good in Vancouver.
Yep.
Canada beat them in overtime in the gold medal game. But for whatever reason, their skill set hasn't been able to translate into the international ice surface. This, of course, being played in North American arenas, North American rules. This is a very NHL-style tournament, so that they can get away with a little bit of the chippiness that they can't get away with when it's an international tournament. You see a guy like Brandon Dubinsky. Now, Brandon Dubinsky has been going after Sidney Crosby as a member of both the Columbus Blue Jackets and as a member of the New York Rangers before that for years now. And Dubinsky knows how to get under the skin of Sidney Crosby. And you saw it yesterday that Dubinsky is not afraid to rough up Crosby. There was that scrum alongside the benches. I think it was in the first period of yesterday's game. This American team knows how to get under the skin of their opponents. And while they may not be able to defend strictly with their defense as a five-man unit that's committed to playing some good team defense, I think they can be effective.
Yeah, but Dave, you got to think Mike Babcock and Joel Quenneville see that, and they're going to talk about that with not only the coaching staff, but this team as far as, guys, let's not let them get off our game here, and we know that they are going to attack us and play that type of style of hockey, but at the end of the day, we don't want that to be a distraction. For me, if the U.S. uses this as their primary strategy, it is going to be a distraction because Canada has a lot of guys that can hurt you on the score sheet. Guys like John Tavares and Tyler Seguin didn't have fantastic games, I thought, yesterday. Sure, it's an exhibition game, but if the U.S. is just going to resort to, the dirty type of hockey, I think it's not going to work in the long run.
Well, it's interesting because you have said it in the last segment, talking about Finland and how they're going to win. He was talking about goaltending, and clearly the U.S. goaltending was excellent last night because, I mean, I don't think they had a shot in the third period until you know, maybe a few minutes were left in the game. And clearly that was really the difference in the game was the goaltending. The other thing, and Drew said it when he was talking just a few minutes ago, was get the under-the-skin factor. I mean, you look at like a player like Justin Abdelkader. He is amazing at doing that. And Ryan Kesler, I mean, is there a bigger disturber in the league than Ryan Kesler? I mean, no. Like, and that hit on Shea Weber, like Ezzy, you talked about it in the first segment today. I thought Weber, when he like turned around, looked like he was going to murder. And you know, that's what you want. You want these guys not thinking about playing defense. You want them thinking about killing you. Wow. And that's clearly the advantage that these American forwards are able to instill, that kind of get these guys off their game, under their skin factor, that we saw as evidenced last night.
Right, but the Canadians have guys that could do that too. Brad Marchand, Corey Perry, and Shea Weber likes to play a physical brand of hockey. At the end of the day, though, Canada wants to play more of a skating style type of hockey where they're concentrating on winning the game as opposed to that. Like, I don't think you want to play playoff style type of hockey. And it gets intense, and you're going to have physical altercations, and you're going to have guys taking runs at each other and cross-checking each other in front of the net and all of that. But I think you just don't want it to be a distraction, because if you play that type of game, I think then the game becomes more helter-skelter and it's more unpredictable, right? And I just don't think that they want to get into necessarily that type of hockey throughout the tournament.
No, I think the U.S. would love for that to happen. I think the U.S. would throw Canada off of their game if that was the case. If they can take Canada away from what Canada wants to do, and or any of the teams in the tournament, I think they're going to do that.
Drew, by the way, I just want to say something. I love this type of hockey. You know me.
I know.
Like, I love the physical brand of hockey, but I'm just saying, in this tournament, the way this roster was constructed, Doug Armstrong and his management staff, they constructed this roster to win based on speed and skill. Sure, they have guys that can muck it up.
You're talking about Canada right now.
Yeah, but all teams, really. I mean, you want to win this type of tournament by scoring goals and winning hockey games that way.
On a straight skill-for-skill competition, if there's none of the extracurriculars, the U.S. can't match up against Canada or Sweden. That's why I think it is so important for them to play on the edge and to try and throw off the opponent. I mean, Ryan Kesler's hit on Shea Weber was more than just a hit from behind. I think it was a tone-setting hit for the rest of the tournament. I'm going to be there. I'm going to do whatever it takes to get under your skin and to win the game, as opposed to necessarily just pretend that this is an exhibition between NHL players.
Well, I think Shea Weber has woken up.
I think what it comes down to is these two teams don't like each other, you know? And like, and you look at it, there were extracurriculars after every whistle. Like, Pavelski's hit on Claude Giroux, which sent him out of the game. He returned later. But still, like,
Oshie on Couture.
So you're just, you watched all of these after the whistle hits and scrums. Buffalo and Burns locked up, which was hilarious. Mm-hmm. And so you're just sitting there and you're thinking to yourself, like, this is the first game of this tournament, and already you've got this kind of agitation.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show coming up next. We're going to look at the Winnipeg Jets players and prospects participating in this tournament and what our expectations are for them. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca. Yeah.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. It's brought to you by Bell Acres Golf and Country Club and Clear Lake Golf Course. Still some time to get out there, swing the sticks at either of those two fine golf courses. That's both Bell Acres Golf and Country Club and Clear Lake Golf Course. My understanding is winter's not going to come until mid-February this year, so there should be a long golf season ahead of us.
Well, hitting 25 degrees tomorrow, so, I mean, you have plenty of time to get the golf clubs
out. Get out there, swing those clubs, make some birdies, drain some eagles.
We're going to be out there at Bell Acres.
Maybe an albatross or two if you're really – that's the most rare score in golf. Do you know that? The albatross.
Yeah.
It's the double eagle.
I still have never had an eagle.
Never had an eagle, eh?
No. Well, an eagle's tough.
It is tough, yeah.
I've had an albatross around my neck, but I've never had an albatross.
Well, this entire show, some would say, is an albatross on the station, but that's a separate issue altogether.
We'll be out at Bell Acres well into October.
That's right. Good confidence there from the weather forecaster himself, Ezra Ginsberg.
Just call me Terry Apostle, Drew.
Okay, well, that's just odd. We're not going to do that. But anyways, Bell Acres and Clear Lake Golf Course, proud sponsors of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Get out there and swing some clubs this weekend. Gentlemen, we continue our look at the World Cup of Hockey, our preview. Number of Winnipeg Jets players participating in this tournament. How many do you guys think? This is a bit of a trivia question. How many Winnipeg Jets players or prospects are playing in this tournament?
Well, we know.
Do you?
I would say seven. Well, there's...
Drew, we know that already. It's seven or eight.
Well, give me a number.
We got Wheeler and Bufflin is two. You got
I gave you two numbers.
Telligan, three. You got Shifley, Trouba, and
I don't think Telligan's under contract anymore, is he?
Telligan was the one I was trying to trick you about. Dave Minuk bringing his A game on his first week on the program.
Is he not a free agent?
No, he's not a free agent.
LegalCurve.com doesn't mess around. We know those.
That's right. He's still a prospect. And the Jets still
maintain his contract,
rights. He's not under contract, but the Jets made him a qualifying offer, so they still retain his NHL rights.
If you want to count Telligan, fine.
I'll count any player that potentially could come back and help the Winnipeg Jets. It's eight.
But it's really seven.
Well, it's really eight.
Well, players under contract, seven. Players who have been drafted by the Jets organization.
Players whose rights are owned by the Winnipeg Jets, it's eight.
But he's not going to play this year for the Jets.
Well, he's not going to play this year, but he might play. He's playing second-line power play, apparently, for Team Russia right now.
So it's eight.
Okay, it's eight. Anyways, expectations for these Jets players. You know, when Blake Wheeler made Team USA at the Sochi Olympics, it was as the 13th forward.
Correct.
He's no longer the 13th forward for Team USA. He's one of the...
He's on the second line right wing. And if it wasn't for Patrick Kane, he'd be on the first line.
He's got to be one of the key contributors to Team USA. Dustin Byfuglien didn't make Team USA back at the Sochi Olympics.
Dustin Byfuglien, if you were listening to the broadcast, they mentioned this yesterday. Dustin Byfuglien has never played for Team USA at any level prior to this tournament. He never played for the U.S. at the World Juniors or the World Under-18s or the World Under-20s, never played at the Olympics or anything like that. This is the first time Dustin Byfuglien has represented the U.S. at a major international tournament, and I think that's incredible.
It's certainly...
And he's on the top pair with Ryan Suter.
A late bloomer, as you were, because usually these guys are, you know, brought up through the World Junior programs and everything else in the Under-17s and the Under-18s. So a great accomplishment for Dustin Byfuglien. The question I have overall, what are your expectations for the Winnipeg Jets players that are participating in this tournament?
Well, I mean, there aren't any players on the Jets playing for Team Canada.
Right.
So we're really talking about
Team North America and Team USA.
And U.S. primarily, because five of the seven players or five of the eight players are on U.S. and North America. So starting off with the U.S., I mean, the expectations are very high, Drew, because as you mentioned, Blake Wheeler made the 2014 Olympic team. I think we all know that he deserved that. And Dustin Byfuglien, I believe, too, deserved to be on that 2014 Olympic team. But needless to say, Dustin Byfuglien gets a great opportunity here, as we mentioned, playing on the top pair with Ryan Suter. We saw him out there. He was buff doing buff. He was on the point of the power play with that excellent shot. He was mixing it up in front of the net. I mean, Byfuglien is not going to be the seventh defenseman of this team. Buff is a big part of this American team. And when you talk about this team is built more, Drew, for the North American Ice Service to be more of that gritty team, doesn't Buff fit in perfectly with that type of game, that physical brand of hockey? So Buff and Wheeler, both of them are going to play a key role on this team. When you're talking about Blake Wheeler, in my mind, the second best right winger in the game right now, second to Patrick Kane, of course, he's going to be playing with Parise and Stepan, and that's an excellent line. So they're expecting a lot of offense out of both of these guys, and they're expecting them to use their physicality as well. As we know, Wheeler and Buff are big hockey players, so the expectations are high. And as it relates to North America, Jacob Trouba and Mark Scheifele, even though Mark Scheifele might not play on that top line with Connor McDavid, he's certainly going to play, and he's one of those veterans, right, Dave, of that North American roster. So expectations are high for Scheifele and Trouba, and maybe Hellebuck not so much because he's not going to be one of the starting goalies. He's the third goalie behind Matt Murray and John Gibson. And then if you want to throw in Patrick Laine, Drew, we talked about him with Juha Hetela during the third segment. Patrick Laine is playing on the top line with Alexander Barkov and Jussi Jokinen. So the expectations are very high. The Jets that are playing in this tournament, Drew, are not playing in supporting roles. They're playing primary scoring roles. maybe with the exception of Connor Hellebuck, of course, because he's a goaltender. But Scheifele, Trouba, Laine, Wheeler, Byfuglien, I mean, these guys are top players for their countries. And if you're a Jets fan, you're loving it.
You know, it's interesting because with the Byfuglien situation, because he's talked about it when we've interviewed him about what it means to be able to put on the U.S. jersey for the first time. And you're right, Drew. It is unusual that a player wouldn't have already achieved this at some point in his career.
No international pedigree. And I mean, Byfuglien's, you know, what, 30, what is he, 30 years old?
Yeah.
You know, so to have no international pedigree and get your first opportunity when you're, you know, ostensibly at the later point in your career.
And he was invited. We'll remember, he was invited to the tryouts in 2014. He obviously didn't make that team. And it was very interesting because remember they had that inside. Who wrote it?
I think it was
from ESPN.
I think it was either Craig Custance or Scott Burnside.
Scott Burnside did the inside within the general managers.
He was embedded when they were critical, and they were critical, and particularly Bobby Ryan of the Ottawa Senators took offense to some of the comments that were made.
Well, with good reason. But it was just interesting because the way they evaluated Byfuglien then versus how Byfuglien is being evaluated now.
They never considered him. They thought he was too much of a loose cannon to really be on the 2014 Olympic team.
Right.
And now he, to what Ezzy said and what you're saying here, is that he's now a key component playing in that, you know, quote-unquote first pairing with Ryan Suter.
And I think that speaks to the maturity in Dustin Byfuglien's game. And I think really it also points, and he himself has attributed it when we've talked to him about the impact of Charlie Huddy and what Charlie Huddy has had on his game and how he's been able to make a positive change to Dustin Byfuglien's game. Obviously, Coach Maurice, but Huddy's in charge of the defensemen. So, you know, it is interesting to hear, like, Dustin Byfuglien in his own words talk about the impact it's had on his game. And then you see it, you know, it's not just recognized in Winnipeg, but within, you know, the fans or the media or the team, but you actually see, you know, now that he's, as Ezzy's saying, playing as in a top-pairing role for the U.S. So clearly, he's really, that's a huge elevation to go from not, you know, being invited but not making the 2014 team to 2016. Now he's a top guy on this American team.
And Dave, Paul Maurice, who's part of the Team Europe coaching staff, he is going to be watching this tournament and obviously hoping that Europe does well, and he's going to be strategizing. But he must just be the happiest watching all of his players in this tournament and the roles that they're playing on their respective teams, right? And when you talk about Nikolaj Ehlers, he was playing for Denmark at the Olympic qualifying tournament, right? So
I don't know how Nikolaj Ehlers, as an aside, I'm not sure how he didn't make Team Europe. He's better than some of the guys who are on Team Europe.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it really shows you, you know, as far as Buff goes, Dave, you're absolutely right. Buff has evolved as a hockey player, especially since he won his first Stanley Cup, but certainly over the last 2 or 3 years, he has turned into not only a good defenseman, but a great all-around player. And I think that's one of the reasons why he has an A on his jersey when maybe you didn't expect him to get an A. You thought another guy in the Winnipeg Jets. But needless to say, this tournament is full of Winnipeg Jets who are going to be making major contributions to their respective teams. And it's great to see.
I think Connor Hellebuck, he's obviously on Team North America. Connor Hellebuck's an interesting case. He's a guy who's ostensibly in a battle to make the Winnipeg Jets, as the Jets, of course, have those three goaltenders. We're not sure how the whole situation is going to play out with Hellebuck and with Pavlik and with Hutchinson.
Yep.
So I think a good performance and a good tournament showing from Connor Hellebuck can certainly help him a lot, get him on the right foot to a season in which a lot of Jets fans are pinning their hopes on him, saying, you know, he's got to be the guy in net. We've seen enough of Andre Pavlik. We've seen, we know what Michael Hutchinson is, you know, for better or worse. Connor Hellebuck is our ticket to potentially a playoff spot. So I think a good tournament for Team North America in net for Connor Hellebuck will go a long way. He's, of course, battling Matt Murray for that starting position for Team North America.
Well, it is interesting that Connor Hellebuck switched his number to 37 this year. Because last year, obviously, that's Dan Snyder's number, and he got the permission of the Snyder family. They gave it to him to be able to wear his, you know, that's the jersey he wore with the ice caps and the moose. He's worn it in college. He's worn it his whole career.
Mm-hmm.
But when he played with the Jets last year, he wore 30.
Right.
But this year, he's changed to 37.
Are you reading between the lines a little bit, David?
Well, I just think it's interesting that why would you switch? If you were thinking, I'm playing with the moose the whole season, then you don't change your number. You just keep it at 30. And then, you know, because realistically, Hutchinson Pavlik would be the 1 and 2.
Sure.
And then, you know, he would come in if there was an injury. Now, it's entirely possible that he's still thinking, I'd rather wear my number. That's the number I've always worn traditionally. I don't want to wear 30 because hockey players are like that. Some players don't care at all about the numbers, and some have a deep, you know, connection to their numbers, as silly as it may sound. And, you know, people may be like, oh, that doesn't make sense. It does. So, I mean, it could simply be, I'm not trying to be a conspiracy theorist. I don't think anything there is that. I just think it could, it's just interesting.
No, I think it's a point that's worth bringing up, Dave. I would be absolutely shocked if Connor Hellebuyck doesn't spend the majority of the season with the Winnipeg Jets. He was very good in his rookie year. And sure, the Jets have to decide whether it's Andre Pavlik or Michael Hutchinson who's going to be his backup. But certainly, I wouldn't expect Hellebuyck to play much with the Moose this year.
I think most Jets fans would hope that's going to be the case, because I think they know what they have in the other two. They're the known quantities, Pavlik and Hutchinson. Hellebuyck, I think they think the sky's the limit.
And the other factor is, especially with goaltenders, is sometimes it makes sense to not rush them in. So, I mean, like, you know, you're saying, oh, you want to get him in, want to get him in. You know, it all depends on what the Jets think they're going to do this year, right? If they think that they're challenging for the playoffs or the next level.
The Jets organization sees a young goaltender in Pittsburgh like Matt Murray, and they probably think as highly as Connor Hellebuyck as the Penguins do about Matt Murray, and they see Matt Murray backstopping his team to the Stanley Cup Finals and saying he's not too young for the spot, so Connor Hellebuyck is probably ready. He's had the seasoning necessary at both the AHL level and last year at the NHL level, that this is now his time. This is, might be his team to be in net with.
You know, Drew, we should announce this too, that Ryan Kesler won't face any supplemental discipline for his hit on Shea Weber. So he's not going to miss any exhibition games or any regulation games.
There you go, Ezzy, with the update there as well. Let's head to break. When we come back, Craig Custance from ESPN.com is going to join us. He's covering Team North America. We'll touch base with Craig about what's going on with those young guns from North America. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Minutes past the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Working hard to get Craig Custance of ESPN.com on the line with us. Going to talk about Team North America with Craig once we are able to hook up with him. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Team North America taking their practice. What did you guys say? Montreal is where they are right now?
Yeah, they play in Montreal tomorrow. Drew, versus Team Europe again.
The second half of, they played in Quebec City a couple days ago. They're going to be back in action against Team Europe. They were actually dominant against Team Europe in their first game. We'll talk to Craig Custance right now about Team North America.
Let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We welcome back to the program from ESPN.com. He's covering Team North America as part of the World Cup of Hockey, Craig Custance. Craig, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure to have you, Craig. Obviously brought you on, like I said, to talk about Team North America. How impressed were you with that 4-0 performance in the – it's only pre-tournament, so, you know, all the necessary caveats and asterisks aside beside it. But how impressive was that performance by Team North America in the dominant victory over Team Europe a couple nights ago?
It was great for that team. I mean, this team is built on speed and skill, and you know, the coaching staff talked a lot about identity going into this tournament. And I think it's important for all of these teams to, whatever that identity is, you know how the Finns are going to play. You know, you saw the identity of the Americans last night against Team Canada, and you saw the identity of Team North America. I mean, they were fast, and it wasn't just, it wasn't just offensively, like up and down the ice, 200-foot game. And, what was impressive to me was that afterwards, the players and the coaching staff alike, they didn't like their third period. Todd McClellan shakes up the lines yesterday in practice, and he said, look, I think we're not even close to our ceiling yet with this team.
Craig, I agree with you. Watching Team North America against Team Europe, it was abundantly clear that this is going to be the fastest team in the tournament. As far as here in Winnipeg goes, Jets fans were pretty excited to see Mark Scheifele playing on that top line with Connor McDavid. But now Todd McClellan's put Connor McDavid alongside Jack Eichel and Johnny Gaudreau. Are you expecting that top line to stay together, or because it's the exhibition games right now, it's possible that these lines are still going to change?
Oh, I'm sure we'll see continued shuffling. And you know, the reason that Todd McClellan didn't stick with what worked, I mean, he said, look, you guys are probably wondering, it was 4-0, and why are we changing lines? And he just said, I have to see all these different combinations and see if maybe we can be even better than we looked at, you know, at times in the first game. So I absolutely expect the lines to shuffle. I mean, Mark Scheifele played on a line yesterday at practice with Austin Matthews and Brandon Saad. And I do think that, you know, the coaching staff wanted to get Mark Scheifele in the middle, and they like him at center. And you know, you get two, I mean, veteran is I guess it's a relative term on this team, but you get two veterans in Saad and Scheifele playing with the youngest kid on the team in Austin Matthews. And I think that was kind of the thought process of putting that line together.
Craig, yesterday in your ESPN Insider article, you wrote about the subplots being Trouba and Gaudreau and how they don't have contracts yet. Do you think that's playing an impact on their, or could impact their play in this tournament?
I don't know. I, you know, both guys are saying the right things, and their focus is squarely on the tournament. To me, the interesting thing is more not whether or not it's impacting them, but whether or not how they play will impact the contract. Like, if you're sitting there in your Calgary and you're a little bit reticent to give, you know, $7 million a year to Johnny Gaudreau, then all of a sudden he lights it up in this tournament. You go, you know what, this kid maybe has earned it. That's against the best players in the world. So, I mean, I can't remember another time where a potential training camp holdout had a chance to enhance their value. And I guess the flip side works, too. If, you know, if Johnny Gaudreau or Jacob Trouba or any of the guys, Hampus Lindholm is still unsigned. There's, you know, there's a few guys around the tournament that are unsigned. If they don't play well, I think on some level it may hurt. But, you know, I both guys said, you know, their focus is squarely, you know, squarely on the game. I had a conversation with Paul Maurice yesterday. I said, do you think any of this is seeping into Jacob Trouba's game? He said, well, you know, it was only one game, but he saw no signs of it yet.
Craig Custance is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You, of course, know Craig's work from ESPN.com. He's covering Team North America. Craig, you know, you look at this Team North America, you look at the goaltending, and Matt Murray got the start in the first game, and, you know, obviously coming off the Stanley Cup win, you know, no surprise he would get the start. Who's going to go tomorrow for Team North America? Is it the opportunity to see either John Gibson or Winnipeg Jets goaltender Connor Hellebuck?
My guess would be John Gibson. Todd McClellan has kind of played things close to the vest, but the fact that Connor Hellebuck was the odd man out in the first game, I have to assume that they're going to want to get a look at John Gibson in this game. Todd McClellan's plan, he said ideally he gets two guys up and running, but in a short, you know, it's a short tournament, you don't have a lot of time to mess around with it. So he said there's going to be an odd man out, and it's too bad for that guy, and that's just the reality. Like, they got to get two guys up and running. He hasn't announced yet, and maybe we'll get a better, a clearer picture of practice today. But my assumption is John Gibson would probably get a good hard look next game.
Craig, what did you think of the game between Canada and the U.S. yesterday? And are you surprised that Ryan Kesler isn't going to face supplemental discipline for his hit on Shea Weber?
I thought the game, you know, I think there's a debate to be had for that hit, but I thought the game itself was exactly what the Americans had talked about when Dean Lombardi put that team together. And I mean, you guys, I don't know how much of it, you know, was heard in your market, but boy, in the States, people were really critical of how that team was put together. And you leave off guys, you know, Phil Kessel off the team, or, you know, there's skill guys that you can plug into that lineup. And this group made it clear that it isn't just about skill. It's about identity. It's about chemistry. I mean, Jack Johnson was a guy I was really surprised to see on that team. And yet, Jack Johnson is a guy that, you know, bleeds red, white, and blue more than any player I know. I mean, he's been representing USA Hockey. Whatever they've asked of him, he's always done, was crushed, you know, when he wasn't part of the last Olympic team. And they wanted a bunch of guys that would care, and I thought it showed in that game. And yes, it's one exhibition game, and it'll be fun to watch them go back at it tonight, those two teams. But that team was built to beat Canada, and I think after one game, that group has to be encouraged that Lombardi and Tortorella and that crew, you know, built it the right way.
So, Craig, what do you think the overall reaction by the fan base is to Team North America, to Team Europe? Do they think it's kind of a shtick, or do they think they're actually legit teams built to win?
I think there's been a little bit of an evolution on this front. When they when they announced the teams originally, you heard the word gimmick and cash grab, and I might have been in this group to begin with. Like, I didn't like it at first. I wanted it to be very traditional, you know, get the countries represented, just like it was an Olympic tournament. And I think once people have seen this, especially the Team North America, seen this team on the ice, maybe when we first saw the first roster and you started to realize this may be the only time, you know, in history we see Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel on the same roster. Like, when is that going to happen again? I think that people warmed up to it. And, you know, not to base everything on Twitter, but, you know, when I run lines out there or, you know, give updates from practice, I didn't know what to expect in the first practice. People were going to be like, oh, boy, you know, spare us, the gimmicky team. And it's been the opposite. People, you know, when we relayed the news that Eichel and McDavid were together yesterday, people went crazy. Like, they were so fired up. And then on another level, Nathan MacKinnon and Jonathan Drouin, when they were reunited. And people seemed to be really excited about this team.
Craig Custance, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Craig, you know, Connor McDavid might, I don't know if he's not yet the best player in the league, he might be very quickly. Are you surprised they went with him as the captain, even though he is really one of the younger players on a younger team? Or is it just, you know, he's got that much respect just based on his talent already that even as a younger player, there's no question that he was going to be the captain?
No, I don't think there was no question. I thought there was, I wondered if they would just go with one of the veteran players and maybe a guy like Brandon Saad with a couple of Stanley Cups, or, you know, Scheifele, who's got a letter in Winnipeg. You know, Ekblad carries himself like a 35-year-old player. But, you know, I got it. In talking to Mark Scheifele, who trained with Connor McDavid on the first day of camp, he said, you really got the sense that the players in that room and the veterans in that room had for Connor McDavid. He said, look, this guy, as good as he is a better person. We respect him immensely. If he's the captain, we're completely behind it. And I think none of the guys, Connor McDavid hasn't been around as long, but I think it was a good choice. And I think the bonus, and I'm sure this probably wasn't the intent, but now if you're Todd McClellan and Peter Chiarelli, you get a look at Connor McDavid and how he handles it and whether or not he's ready to have the C in Edmonton. And it's almost like a trial run for him.
Craig, you know, you mentioned Aaron Ekblad, and I wanted to talk to you about the defense for a second. I agree that Team North America is certainly a sleeper pick to win this tournament. There's no doubt that they're the fastest team in this tournament. You could probably argue that they have the most skill of any team in this tournament. But after Aaron Ekblad, you've got guys like Morgan Riley, of course, Jacob Trouba, Seth Jones. Do you think, though, that this defense is going to be good enough to actually go ahead and win this tournament, especially when you're talking about going up against elite groups of forwards that Canada have, that the U.S. has, teams like the Russia have in North America's group? Is that defense good enough to actually win this tournament?
Yeah, it's a fair question. I mean, I think this team that we saw, there definitely is enough skill to win, but that's a question mark. And the Murray-Jones pair I like just because they've got experience together. They played together in Columbus, so I think that's good. But you're right, it isn't Canada. It isn't Sweden. Like, I mean, look at Sweden's defense. It's not even close. So I think that's a legit concern. And, you know, the other thing that in watching that game last night, the Americans playing Canada, I wondered how the Team North America is going to respond if Team USA comes in and tries to push them around and play physical. They didn't see that. It was like watching a completely different game last night compared to what Team North America played. So I think the defense is a concern, and I would wonder if this team will push back if they get, you know, shoved around, or if they can just outskate everybody and you can't catch them. Maybe that's the strategy there.
Craig Custance is covering Team North America for ESPN.com. Craig, really appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Our pleasure, Craig. Take care. Let's head to break. When we come back, Team Sweden. The Swedes, the Trey Kroner, they're next up in our preview of the World Cup of Hockey. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.